That's a black movie joint is doing this. It's going to be great.
One has to do one's bit.
This is about writing a novel, and it's called All at Sea. As a wise man once said, writing a novel isn't easy. When I began, I was like a child. I gazed out to sea and dreamed of treasure islands, fat ladies singing, and agents beating down my door. But my plans ran into storms, hidden reefs, and a mutinous crew. My characters turned into a bickering bunch of backbiting cutthroats. Before long, we had all lost the plot. Luckily, I found a harbor, a creative writing group, where people read my work and agreed that it wasn't working. Usually they were at loggerheads about each other's work, but in my case reached consensus without any difficulty. They found my plot leaky and my characters problematic. Now my characters, for reasons best known to themselves, kept developing twists in their personalities. Jeremy, for instance, conceived as an honest accountant, started cheating my protagonist, Charles, and by chapter two was cheating with Charles's wife too. I caught my main character heading for Jeremy's house one evening, looking mad as hell and waving a shotgun. Luckily, I hadn't loaded the weapon and there were no fatalities, but it was a close shave. I was badly shaken and it took all my wits to get them to chapter four alive. Now, my female characters were no better. Loretta, my leading brunette, threw a tantrum when she met Linda, a minor character whom I had depicted as beautiful and blonde. Loretta wasn't having it. She followed Linda into the ladies one night in a bar, and while I was trying to stop a fist fight amongst my other characters on the docks, tried to drown Linda in the hand basin. Now, hoping to reconcile the pair, I arranged dinner in an expensive restaurant. The hors d'oeuvre and main course went swimmingly. When the waiter arrived with Linda's lemon cheesecake, however, Loretta slammed it into lovely Linda's face, and Linda went at her with a dessert fork. I managed to separate them, but that night I called it a day. I couldn't risk having my leading lady in prison or on death row for murdering a minor character. I might be years writing letters to the governor seeking a reprieve, and God knows what my other characters would be getting up to while I was doing that. No. My mind was made up. Lovely Linda would have to leave us. I hired a hitman to drown her. Luckily, the body was never found. I was relieved. I don't do funerals. Life is too short. A wedding, I thought, was more my thing. So I arranged for Loretta to marry Luigi, a young Sicilian. The ceremony was a disaster. When the priest asked if there was any reason why the couple shouldn't be married, two mafiosi stood up and claimed that Luigi had promised to marry them. Loretta tore off her veil and stormed out screeching, "Luigi, how could you do this to me?" "Nico, Mario," Luigi cried, running down the aisle and embracing the two mafiosi, while my other characters stood around looking bewildered. Fearing a mutiny, I led the characters to a pub, where I bought rounds of drinks until the small hours. I left first, but that was a mistake. As soon as I'd left, they all went wild, and a few months later, three of my female characters were pregnant. One man thought he was pregnant too, but it was a false alarm. Weddings, they give guests crazy ideas. Now, in due course, the babies were born. Knowing nothing about babies, I shot the novel forward 16 years. this was another disaster. The babies, now teenagers, were experimenting with drugs, alcohol, alternative lifestyles, and bullying other kids online. I've been years writing now, and none of my characters show any sign of reform. I spend most of my time in prisons, drug shelters, and hospitals. I feel guilty about Linda, too. I really liked her. It's so unfair. I could have written a terrific novel if the characters had played ball. Now I can't sleep at night wondering what they get up to next. But I have a new idea for a plot. I take my characters on a long voyage, scuttle the ship in the dead of night, then row back to shore on a plank, aided by dolphins if necessary, to write a self-help book or poetry. Anything, so long as there are no characters in it. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we have Phillips Land, please?
A lot of fun. This is in two parts, if that's okay. But if it gets this, they're not very long. I don't want to be a prophet, but you know, I just want to make sure that people understand the message that, you know, we are living in the world of technology, and we don't live in the real world anymore. So, like a few nights ago, Shane mentioned that there was a strawberry moon in a summer solstice. And everyone knew about it online, but nobody ever saw a strawberry moon. Yet, we all knew it was there, because we all saw it on Facebook. And it was so bizarre. A strawberry moon's like a full moon in the summer solstice. Everyone read about it, but no one saw it. And I saw it, and I was thinking, this doesn't make any sense. So I decided to write about that. The second part of the poem speaks for itself, so I'm going to read it out now. Falling knowledge. Oh yeah, sorry. The moon in this is a laptop. Part one, falling knowledge. Light polluted face stares at a private moon that is always set to full, lying on the bed free sit-up with the instrument resting on a knee. It has been on too long, and the summer short darkness has nearly ended. She reads a strawberry moon that piques a sort of interest, and it's only a window way to see a real glow in a sea of green clouds, milked in its glow. She stays solidified on a fake bed silks. She should go to sleep. Part two, falling selfies. Each falling selfie is a mask of happiness bliss, a calendar collection of smiling faces, each picture amiss. A kiss, a cover-up of a flaw in a rising cheek, behind an excited, perfect smile. This is the loneliest man in his perfect perspective. His girlfriend wants an openness to trust, to slip through relationship silks, but he wants to be distracted by selfie projects and can't tell her he has failed her. Social circles are calmer when a boat roll is... This poem needs to be worked on, excuse me. Social circles are calmer when a boat is oared to abreast, timed perfect. He freezes in the front of a star sky, and a phone flies away like kites and snaps a millisecond, advertising him in seconds. Thank you much.
Thanks, Phil. Can we have Charles Clark, please?
I'm reserving my best shots for our limerick later in the week. I decided not to reread any of my more masterly efforts. I thought I would read a poem by Thomas Hardy that I have always liked a lot, long before I actually knew anything about West Gallery music. which is what it's about, I think. Anyway. And long before I discovered that, somebody I knew, not very well, a long time ago, a student, has published a couple of books on the subject. And also long before I realized that my Dorset ancestors were long since gone from Dorset. So I thought this is possibly quite well known. Very short. Afternoon service at Millstock, circa 1850. On afternoons of drowsy calm, we stood in the panelled pew, singing one voice a Tate and Brady psalm to the tune of Cambridge New. We watched the urns, we watched the rooks, the clouds upon the breeze, between the wires of glancing at our books and swaying like the trees. So mindless were these outpourings, though I'm not aware that I've gained by such a thought on things since we stood sobbing there.
Thanks, Charles. Can we have Mary O'Connell, please?
This is just finished tennis season, and Andy Murray was lucky, which was great. So this is a poem with a lot of tennis puns. It's called What the Deuce? You couldn't call him sporty, yet he was always game. But life, just playing singles, had grown of late too tame. He begged a flame-haired Amazon to partner him one day. For this backhanded compliment, she swore she'd make him pay. How dare he match his skill with hers, or try to win her heart, when she had the advantage to beat him from the start? Refusing his proposal, she laughed him out of court, saying, "You're no ace, in fact, your serve is always far too short." From the racket she created, this volley of abuse, the net result was clear to see for those not too obtuse. He'd never play mixed doubles or have a chance to swing when trying to smash her forehand, the poor chap broke a string. Forced errors and three double faults distressed him even more. Confronted by a loveless match, he lacked the balls to score.
There you are, Donald. Can we have Ray Hanrahan, please?
It's a short one, and it's untitled. See him over there, conserving the dust of ages, sweeping it to a neat pile, then scattering out and tracing in the ruins of his futile task tomorrow's crooked, tragic path. You may ask what he is doing, for in the bloodless coin of today it carries no weight at all. But, and note this well, he's heedless to your concerns, for there works a poet. Thank you.
Thanks, Lee. Can we have Patricia Walsh, please?
Thank you, Rob. This poem was, it kind of stems from his inspiration. I suppose I know it's a psychiatric condition, and people say, like, I'll go have drinks and stuff, and say, oh, you shouldn't be drinking, you'd be asking for trouble, you know? And these people, same people, were always boasting how sloshed they got, and like before. So I was like, fuck you, I'll drink as much as I really will want. So this is about asking for psychosis. You were never Jesus nor a Sweden celebrity. This roving in public not your forte. Rising and falling over a minor ditch. Hoping against hope for discipline saved. Life's too good for favoured ideation. The beat that flips you, you become. The promise of burning is permanent records. And ominously seeking a higher power. Climbing for independence, a tortured mind. Seeks her family, a library upturned. Slotting in secrets, not betraying your identification. Nor let the other hand know what it's doing. Not letting on agony, bursts of no energy. Work giving you energy is avoided. Close to the time, ravaging the domicile. Persistently useless to another purpose. You pull the joint one last time, just in time, to rest your weary bones in a foreign shop. No outbursts yet, no crises are infamy, enough to cause concern over a neglected elderly. This too shall pass. Proper ace up your sleeve, spinning jennies of love tangled in moral threads. Enough to keep together the bespoke illness. Excessive sorrow still eating it well. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. So we have this Mori Ruani Oda.
Di Fumbulbe Gori Vermas, Fonsulu Gome. Erin Nutt is a Miglein Trilichtenaid, when my dame is father house of Fulham, August Stig Eron Vihulichta, August Vimeric Falumi or Viacha, August Vias Fear Tokalesh on sort of stale at Hawako. Akahora unvanrian, so shkrius dorm reeller. Anyway, this poem's mostly in English, with a bit of grammar thrown in. And I was in a biology class, and I was fascinated by the life of bees, particularly their reproduction. So this is inspired by that. We are amateurs in worship. Nineka, mother, is supreme. We trace our globe across your distended abdomen. This is the oedema of our origin. In reverence we consolidate, salivate to form our six-sided cathedral, its altar your central chamber. Neneka, we are one in womb, our hymns your striped sighs as you heave out 4,000 glistening grubs. Each newborn a finger on the baby's fist, the young are but a tide that ebbs and flows, you dine upon last season's spawn as you contract a wash, a wave. You form a perfect circle. You are the conductor of 20,000 twitching antenna. Neneka, you are feared. The priestess throws her twins away in your forest, but cloaks herself in bark and scuttles away as they are dragged to your nursery. There, like twins a thousandfold, faceless cellmates where mouth and anus are one, a visceral song of shit and squeaks. Queen is a satire. A cruel sanitation. You are the dumpster deity, the virgin mother, the rape whore. Your royal jelly seeps from your serous cells, a divine condiment to swaddle your lani, is schlauene and clivon shin. As your neighbors slit their girl's clitoris, cinch them from sin, bar them from their base instincts, you royal in ecstasy. You need no lullabies, for what is there to fear in the omnipresent bosom? Neneka, a Vonrian, a Viach, Kerbe anima hooked her erhi, Shisha ato Orein.
Right. Can we have Benjamin Bonds, please?
Rooks perch on the spines of slate roofs, silent and watchful. Their distribution draws attention to the geometry of the buildings beneath them. The evening sky is light and dark and slides across itself. I stare at the situation until I'm no longer staring at the situation.
Thank you. Here we have Seamus Harrington, please.
Thanks, Rab. Staying on the same team, Benjamin. It always amazed me how a flock of birds can, in such close proximity, turn in unison. Who's calling the shots? Who did the training? Or a school of fish, it's similar. Like Johnny Giles, turn on a sixpence. Briefing at 1800. Now listen up, you'll wait for my signal of semaphore wings. We leave no in turn, up, upbeat and away, then wheel down and over these sandy mount sands as we end our sojourn. Recheck your sonar, the first wave of 2000. Remember the drill, the silver blur for the lensman. Our climb will be steep with no afterburn. Leave the stacks of pool bag, first waypoint to starboard. Now that grounded hern with her excess burden is not your concern. Veer with your wingman, he knows the nocturne. Maintaining formation, on course we'll return. Watch out for jets, they'd swallow a flock. No foul-ups as the crow flies. In line abreast, I'll be on station, directly astern on the fly past.
Can we have Terry O'Rourke, please?
This is an interesting story. This isn't mine. It was handed to me by a man called Paul Fields, who I call the Gatekeeper, a generation ago, written by somebody in their 20s, who must be close to some of our ages now. Hi, Paul. Here's a small... Sorry, these aren't my proper glasses. Selection of my poems. I hope you like them. They are all fairly self-explanatory, except those that aren't. Some are a bit over the top. So, 1989, but I had a figarious. Hopefully someone would recognize the name, because I wonder what he's doing now. His name is Mark R. White. Magic Roundabout, 1989. It's your choice, stated Temptation. Money is a means of exchange, said Logic. You will believe in me, said Truth, and I will make you doubt, added Confusion. God will understand, said Reason, if it exists, announced Doubt. I know I am right, shouted Ego. No one can be right, murmured Understanding. Vanity looked in the mirror. Self-pity cried about love. Love clung to strength. Strength gave birth to determination. Determination grew. Everything will be good, said confidence. What's the point, said depression. Time will tell, announced stupidity. And humor laughed until joy cried. Time will tell you nothing, expressed experience. Well then, that is something, said a clever bystander. This is not a riddle, snapped Impatience. We will never know, sighed Wisdom. I know some things, said Knowledge. Yes, there are processes, cycles, and patterns, said Intellect. Think of someone else, pleaded Compassion. Who, what, and why, shouted Anger. Everyone, the earth, and life, shouted Anger. Be calm, collect your id, and be. By sanity. Time for bed, said Instinct and Humor simultaneously. Peace at last, suggested Hermie.
All right.
Can we have Kieran McCart, please?
How's it going?
It's
draw your attention to this poster on the wall over here, if you're not doing anything with tonight. We're running a reading series in the Wanswoki Gallery of new plays. It starts on Wednesday, there's one following Wednesday, and one at the end of the month as well. If you'd like to do something on a Wednesday night, that's something you could do. And now we're going to the airport. I thought that they said, hey, who do you want, in what way, which name in this booth will be for you a golden tooth and make shine what you lack. But just then, after my stroke of pen, they seemed to change their tack. Their speech was not their act, they smiled and turned their back. Despite what I said, in fact, and then they said some more words. Well, what about our sacred pact that makes you a Democrat and lets everybody see that this is democracy? So look, I don't know why you sound so shook. You ought to know by now that when is the new how. They only do what they allow. Who's they? You thought they were we. Didn't your last phrase start with, we are free to be? But there was no retort. Look, file her a report. I'm sorry to be so short, but I doubt it'll make court. But we'll be in touch, I'm sure. And I wanted to know when, because I didn't know back then, I didn't know back then that that's the game we were playing. Or that I'd need a trough for the pinch of salt needed taking to digest what you're saying. Or that something to vote for was too much to ask for. Or that the feeling now I know doesn't empower me that much more than the feeling did before. Until I said no, you don't have to think of yourself so low. These people will come and go, and they've about as much chance as me at still being here when the event doesn't happen. What's your calling? Who's your captain? Thank you.